Hello, this is Tyler Henschel from the band Insomniac Folklore, and you are listening to Dorkness to Light.
Dorkness to Light, hosted by Alan and M. Middleton.
We aim to explore what takes place at the corner of theology and geekology. Episode 33, Feedback Time.
Welcome to episode 33 of Dorkness to Light. This is our show where we take a look at pop culture in terms of where those stories intersect with concepts in religion, faith, theology, and spirituality.
In this episode, we are taking a huge risk. We are turning over the responsibility for content development of this episode to you, our lovely listeners. That's right. It's a feedback episode. Now, my only question for you, Em, is do we need a better name for our listeners than the very generic lovely listeners? I mean, Dorknessites? Dorkness Files? Dorks? There's gotta be something better than dorks.
You know what? We'll table that for next feedback.
Okay,
episode.
Gotcha. For now, we'll see what our lovely listeners had to say. Because whatever you want to be called, the key fact is that we have awesome listeners who send us awesome feedback. So it's time to go through that whole big bag of emails, faxes, and notes.
In a feedback message for the other podcast we do, Short Box Showcase, Nathaniel Wayne brought up this show. Had a lovely time listening to your anniversary special. Your work is always top-notch, and there is no shame in adding a plug for Dorkness to Light, because it's awesome, and I love it, and please don't ever stop doing it.
Well then.
I was recently on an episode of the Council of Geeks YouTube channel talking about being non-binary, which was really fun to do, really fun to talk to Nathaniel about. And at the end of that, he's like, what do you want to plug? And I was like, Dorkness to Light. And he was like, I'm so glad you went with that. And I was like, it's my baby.
Yes. Now, I wanted to give a shout out to the Redeemed Otaku podcast, who we've mentioned before. And their episodes from Ramen Con recently came out. That's an anime con that they go to every year in South Bend, Indiana. And they always do a few panels. Bex usually cosplays at least one day. And one of the things they do every year is they do a presentation about one aspect of Japanese culture and how that compares to U.S. culture. It's like they call it connect the dots or dot to dot.
Oh,
like,
that's cool.
Like how something is presented in American animation and Japanese anime and how it's different, how the cultures are similar. But one of the things she also does either during that or a different presentation is makes rice.
Nice.
So they have a panel which is some education / cooking demo.
Awesome.
And that's pretty great.
Awesome,
so
awesome.
If you are lucky enough to attend, you might leave with some food. And so, you know, that is not a distinctly Christian panel. It's not a Christian con that they go to, but they do feed the hungry, at least among con goers.
And we are always, always big supporters of feeding the hungry nerds. Next up, we have an update from a former guest and musician, Nate Allen, who we talked to about his upcoming project on episode 27. That project has now come to fruition, and it was announced by his wife, Tessa, saying, our big surprise of the summer is that Nate wrote a book, and it is called Launching, Landing, and Moving Forward, a Manual for the Emotional and Tangible Navigation of Life's Transition Seasons. that is the final result of the work that he had been working on, dealing with his church hurt, and sort of explaining some of that and giving sort of a manual and an advice for other people going through similar situations. So it is going to be available on his upcoming tour and on the web store. And so far it's gotten some pretty great reviews, so... That is the update from that, is if you found that episode interesting, you can, in fact, buy the book.
And they also recently wrapped up their summer tour and added this comment. Since then, we've been very busy with life in Kansas City. We're in full-on tax season mode. That's second taxes if you get an extension.
Right.
Which will transition quickly into preparation for our new baby.
Yeah, so there you go. So great news all around for the... Destroy Allen's.
Yes. We also got thanks from Jeff Anderson and Coyote Kid for talking up their crowdfunding campaigns, and both of them met their goals.
Yes.
Now, Coyote Kid, remember, that is the band formerly known as Mar and the Mainsail. They had a stretch goal that they added late in their campaign, which they also met. And what was that cool thing?
They made a D&D campaign, which... I was a little bit crushed to realize was going to be one of their stretch goals, because it was for whatever, you know, a certain dollar amount baseline. And it's like, in addition, everyone at this level and up is going to get a copy of the game. And we had the one right under it.
Yes.
I was just so crushed.
Yep.
But then what they did is they were so close to their stretch goal, I think, or had just passed it. And they were like, you know what? In thanks for all of the people who in the last like 12 hours, like it was a rush to the finish.
That one was a touch and go.
Yeah. That final push was like really, really close. And I think they were either $50 short or $50 over. So like they were like right on the cusp. And so they decided, you know what? In thanks for you guys for all of the massive push and support that was happening during that last 2 days. They're going to do the stretch campaign. They're going to do the D&D module. They're going to send it to everyone.
Hey!
So.
We will keep you posted.
We will keep you posted once I get it and once I run a game, because those are both going to happen.
And our buddy Vera Wild wrote in to share her nervousness about an upcoming speaking event she had. And this would be her first ever at a church. I'll be speaking to a congregation of Unitarian Universalists.
So basically the softest possible Christian audience.
But I'm kind of terrified. I mean, I know these are the laid-back, no-judgment folks I'll be talking to, and they've given me virtually no restrictions on what to talk about or even the tone they expect me to take. But as someone who's only ever been to any church twice in my entire life for anything other than a memorial or a wedding... This is a leap. While I'm still formulating ideas and solidifying an actual script, I find myself regularly returning to the parallels between my approach to spirituality and to my own sense of self. I wasn't raised in any faith, and while the idea of God was in the home, it was always very nebulous. As I've come into being an adult, my approach has pretty much always been, I really don't know. I mean, this direction feels kind of right. But I don't know where it's going, or if I'll veer off somewhere else down the line. I guess I'll find out. Which is pretty much also my stance on my sense of gender at this point. That took a little longer to get to the same place, because unlike spiritual notions, the idea of what a proper boy or girl was a bit more ingrained and took some time to fully shake off. But now here I am, a bit off the beaten path, not sure where I'm going, and being far more comfortable with that than I ever would be making definitive statements. When I was a child, I spake as a boy. I understood as a boy. I thought as a boy. But when I became an adult, I embraced feminine things. But I never put that boy away. Not really. He's still there, a part of me. Evolved. Like a Pokemon. Sorry. I couldn't help myself.
One of these days, we're going to have to talk about the God Pokemon. Because there's like... some really interesting theology going down in the Poke world if you can actually capture God and literally keep him in your pocket.
Yeah.
There's something there. On our current events episode, episode 29, Dave McElvaney wrote in and said, "Greetings, Alan and Em. First, I am sorry for the loss of Rachel Held Evans, who seems to have been a source of inspiration to you both and who left this world so young, which is always sad. Second, about your brief discussion of Beth Moore and the controversy within the Southern Baptist Convention, I hadn't heard of her or her situation, but I think I've known and loved some women like her, and I wish her well. This may sound a little odd coming from a lifelong Roman Catholic, since my church is possibly more high-bound on the subject of women preaching from the pulpit than even the SBC. But the nuns who gave me my first introduction in religion made the possible mistake of emphasizing the great importance, even in those pre-Vatican II days, of following our informed consciences. And my informed conscience tells me that God made men and women for his purpose. But I see no reason to suppose that those purposes require that ordination or preaching remain exclusively the domain of men and not women. In listening to the feedback you've received, I'm very happy to hear the variety of listeners who are quite engaged in your podcast. It's reassuring to know that I'm not all alone in that. I was also especially pleased to know that Alan read and liked Penguin Island. I spent much of my life thinking that I was alone in that too. So thank you.
Dave McElvaney, we are with you. Now, I did want to address Dave's comment about our discussion coming from his Catholic perspective. And in no way were we taking a secret swipe at Catholicism in that discussion. Or even other faiths outside of Protestantism, were fans of a lot of aspects of Catholicism, of the culture and of the practices and of the belief. So that was not intended to be a side swipe.
Right. It was really just a big frustration with the two of us living in America, which is primarily a Protestant informed nation, I would say, for the most part. The complementarian, egalitarian divide is just so frustrating, and we run into it so frequently.
And again, we're looking at it from the totally Protestant side of that.
Yeah, and there are plenty of other sects and faiths and groups that are sort of figuring out their own things as far as who can and can't preach. And we're now getting into this position of, well, can we let gay people preach? Mm-hmm. Can we let trans people preach? And so like that is always shifting. And so there are some groups that have always been like, yeah, whoever, doesn't matter. And then some people who are like, well, that might be a bridge too far.
Right.
Which I do always find funny, because not to make grand sweeping generalizations, but if you find a 45-year-old single woman who has dedicated herself so powerfully to the study of faith and scripture, there is a high likelihood she's a lesbian. So it's kind of too late to put that one back in the bottle, just generally. But there's always sort of conversations about, you know, should priests be marrying? Can unmarried people preach? Can single people preach? Can people who've been divorced preach? And so that's just always a conversation that's going on. We see that a lot more in Protestant circles, because Protestants really like to protest.
It's what we do. It's who we are.
So, but yeah, so I think it's mostly just a chance for us to sort of vent our annoyance that in some cases we're still having this conversation. It's like,
and a definite shout out to Dave's nuns, who gave him that freedom of conscience as a really valuable gift.
I love nuns. I love nuns so much. It is the great thing that I missed out on in my childhood. Mary and nuns.
Yeah, true.
I'm like, man.
At some point, we are going to do the Catholic episode. We're not going to spoil the name of it, so we already have the name for it. Someday we need to really sort of talk about our feelings about that. But that day is not today. And Penguin Island. That was wild. That was wacky, but a pretty fun read.
On that same episode, we told Kirk's embarrassing offering plate story.
If you forgot, it involved his fly being down. Just saying. Just in case you forgot.
Yeah. I'm so sorry, Kirk. We also got a response to that from Karen of the Between the Pages blog, where food and pop culture meet. Unfortunately, I may be able to top this offering plate story. Before our first child was born, we started looking for a church that was more focused on kids. One of the first churches we visited, we sat in the back, so by the time the plate got to us, it was pretty full. Somehow, we managed to completely botch the passing of the offering plate, the basket fell, the money went everywhere. We left as soon as the service ended and never went back.
So we love being your safe space to share your embarrassing church stories. That is what we're here for.
Here's the thing. God forgives, but we might never forgive ourselves.
God forgives and forgets. And I don't think I'm ever going to forget Kirk's story. I'm just saying.
Well, to take a little bit of the sting out of that,
I have a couple of stories myself. Now, one very recent, because we have had family move to the area recently. My brother-in-law and father-in-law have been coming to our church. And your mom caught her dad.
Okay. He was an usher for how many years?
Church treasurer for how
long? Church treasurer. And yet.
He was messing with the offering. And we don't do it in traditional baskets, but in like, you know, sort of faux velvet bags that hang, you know, from a couple of wooden handles.
Yeah, it's to prevent the debauched.
That and, frankly, to a little theft as the basket goes by, too. But it also made it difficult and awkward for what your grandfather was trying to do, which was make change from the offering.
You know.
Your mom caught him pulling money out. He said, "No, I swear, I'm just pulling a five out, but I put some 20s, I swear."
Our church has vending machines and a cafeteria. Like, you couldn't just go and find a vending machine to break your 20.
The other story is from about 25 years ago, when I was treasurer of a church back in Virginia, and the church had had a set location after being a church plant for just over a year. And this was actually going to be the first Sunday that the founding pastor couple, they were going to be away. They were going to be on vacation. So it would have been, whatever, 15, 16 months, and they were finally going to take a Sunday off. So the cats were away. I first suspected something might be up when the ushers came to take the offering, but instead of the wicker baskets, which we did use there, they were armed with commercial kitchen mixing bowls, like big metal mixing bowls. Karen, from between the pages, knows about big metal stainless mixing bowls. And then I started hearing the distinctive sound of coins landing in metal bowls. What had happened behind my back?
This is still like the funniest prank I have ever heard of.
Was that the worship leader, Paul?
Oh!
Now it all makes sense.
God, I'm so proud of him.
Thought it would be funny if all the regular attendees brought their offering in that week in coins. Somebody was prepared and brought some, you know, coin rolling on, you know, the envelopes, the sleeves. For me to use in counting the offering, but I did get some odd looks from the bank that Monday morning when I went to deposit the 40 pounds worth of coins for the offering. And now that I am almost over that, it was a pretty great prank.
Pretty good.
I'm just saying.
It was pretty good.
If you know a church treasure, I would even say if you love your church treasure, this is an awesome one. I'm just saying.
I will put a caveat.
Provided everyone has a sense of humor.
Provided everyone has a sense of humor and fewer than 40 attendees.
And the pastors are away. That helps too.
That too. Tim Price sent us a message on that episode as well. He says, "I've only gotten through a little bit of the episode so far, but now I'm sold on watching Good Omens. I haven't read the book, but bought a secondhand copy a while ago. Don't know how I'll find time to read it, but I promise that I will try." I've heard that the series takes some fairly large diversions from the book. But
weirdly enough, that often happens when the author is involved. Because, like we've mentioned this before, it's a chance for them, and specifically Robert Kirkman on The Walking Dead feels this way. It's a specific way to go down another path.
There's some really interesting interviews that you can get from Neil Gaiman, mm-hmm. because he says that a lot of the changes that they made were actually incorporating things from the planned Good Omens sequel that was never written because Sir Terry passed away. Mm-hmm. There's so many like sweet and heartfelt stories from the Good Omens like production. Yeah. Yeah. Just like makes me tear up thinking about mm-hmm. it. Just mm-hmm. how much Neil Gaiman loved his best friend. Yeah. Like, it's just, oh, it gets me. It gets me every time. And someone pointed this out. When you are watching Good Omens for maybe the fourth or fifth time and you feel like taking a really, really long time to do this, anytime you can find a newspaper or an ad or something like that, pause it and check it out. Because, of course, nothing is an accident. They printed newspapers or like flyers and things to have up in the shop. And a lot of them are Discworld references to Sir Terry. And one of them, there's an ad that features prominently in one shot. And if you look just ever so slightly to the left in the personal section, there's one that says, missing hat. My Uncle Terry's hat was left at a bookstore. If you come across it, please return. And I'm like,
yes.
I love Good Omens. I love it so much.
And Raina Swiftsage from a Christian gaming podcast thanked us for giving her show a shout out. And she was excited that you loved her name. Thank you. I'm quite fond of it myself.
You know, having a unique name is both a blessing and a curse, but I'm like really hoping that in this D&D fueled like era, having a name like Raina Swiftsage, which makes you sound like a powerful paladin or a mighty druid leader of the forest, I really hope that gets you some cool points these days.
It does from us. Now, I wanted to comment on a back channel conversation that I had with a listener who was on the other side of the aforementioned debate about women, pastors, and senior leadership. And they asked, in actually a kind and gentle way, and I mean that, about the theology behind that position. And I just ended up sending our church position paper on the subject, including the message, but most important, we love you. And their reply was, I never doubted, love you guys too. It's just that pleasant, respectful theological disagreement hardly ever happens, especially like online.
Yes.
So a shout out to this one time when it did happen.
We have great listeners.
We do. We do. And on the episode where we talked about the honor given to our favorite harpist, Tambor, we heard from Tambor.
And she said, thank you for this encouraging and exultant podcast. I screamed when Em said that my hair is last unicorn-esque. Lady Amalthea is literally the reason I dyed my hair white. And my last name is pronounced Sirpka. I cried a little bit at the amount of love and support that I feel. Heart emoji.
And I said, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for the kind words. Oh no, we got your last name wrong. At least we got your first name right. Now, on the last name, I did not want to question you, but I was going to dadsplain you and say, I don't think that's the right pronunciation. But the pronunciation I was going to correct you with was also wrong.
Yeah.
So it's sort of a wash. I'm glad that actually didn't happen. I would just confess. Here in the safety of this confession booth, that I did consider that. So I didn't think you were right.
But
the one that I thought
wrong,
was right was also quite wrong as well. Sirpka. Well, to that, she replied,
oh, don't worry. No one gets my last name right. And most people don't even get my first name right. So you nailed that. Thank you again for the encouragement.
I said, you're welcome. As you may have been able to tell from the episode, we kind of like you. Blessings on you and your work.
And she said, if I have the nerds on my side, no one can stop me.
Yes. Now that was a great interaction with the creator. We were on cloud 9 after that one.
We heard again from our friend Karen, looking forward to listening to this. I have a niece who is a professional musician, and one of her specialties is the harp. It's really nice to have someone in the audience who has experience listening to harp music.
Yeah.
Actually, one of the people I work with at work, her sister, is I believe a cellist in the local symphony. And so when we were talking about the timbre episode and I was re-listening to it constantly, I was like, oh man, you should listen to this. You should listen to this album. And she was like, I need to get my sister to listen to this because she loves classical, but she also does love prog rock, experimental pop rock music. And so I was like, well, this is made for her. This is literally tailor made for her.
And recently on Twitter, Timbre told a story growing up that for whatever it was, you know, third grade career day, what you want to be when you grow up. And her answer was a fancy harpist. And as we said, the whole family is musicians, but, you know, her mom reasonably wanted to maybe tamp that down, saying, you know, harpists always, they just wear black and sit in the symphony. There's no such thing as a fancy harpist.
Well, and Timbre said, watch me go dye my hair white and create a whole sort of aesthetic around being a unicorn, Mom.
Fancy harpist.
Fancy harpist.
Boom. And from Dave McElvaney again, greetings. Em and Alan, thanks for this episode. And congratulations to Timbre on the UNESCO honor. I always appreciate episodes which offer me music I would not likely discover on my own, and this one does not disappoint. In fact, just now, I went to Timbre's Bandcamp page and ordered the Silent Night album on CD. Why would he do that?
Because he's old. Though I will say, we also own it on CD and pretty much just
really
put
good.
It on, in during Christmas and
it
just listen to the whole
really
thing
good.
On the loop.
He says, I'll probably order Sun and Moon too, but as my Auntie Mame says, we need a little Christmas now. By the way, with my Silver Age comic sensibilities, Day Boy and Night Girl sounds like a teen superhero duo of the 1960s. I know that's not true, but that's where my mind goes. Live long and prosper, Dave.
I mean, I would read that book.
So I told Dave that I appreciate him giving a shot to all of the very, very obscure listening options that we have offered in the life of Dorkness to Light, and I thanked him for being a good sport with our music.
I wonder if he's picked up Tony O'Kay yet.
Ooh. I should put some of that on the webpage.
Yeah. A
couple of those videos.
I will also point out, I've been working on this for like a whole entire year, but it is actually happening. There is a Dorkness to Light Spotify page, which has a couple playlists on it that have our recommended sort of go-to music. And at some point in the next week or two, I'm going to get a post on the blog and you can send out a link on the Twitter to some of those playlists. Basically, there is the recommended our personal sort of favorite songs,
right,
but songs that have some like pretty good spiritual or theological like messages or concepts behind
some
them.
Meat on the bones.
Some real good meat on the bones. There's a lot of Hunchback of Notre Dame on that. Just
Pointing
that out. And then there's also one which is sort of my baby, which is called Pop Culture Spirituality, which is songs from, you know, secular sources that have really strong spiritual, you know, messages and concepts in them.
When you said that, I thought you meant every song that's ever been on Supernatural.
No, I was just
good,
thinking,
good.
I should put Kansas on there. No, I'm not going to do that. I have standards.
Too obvious.
I say I have standards. I am also a completionist. The first song on the playlist is A Cruel Angel's Thesis from Neon Genesis Evangelion.
There you go. Boom. At least we can probably get Redeemed Otaku and Reina Swift Sage to at least listen to that song.
Oh, yeah.
They're familiar with that one, so that's good. Now, a couple episodes back, we talked about some of our favorite things that were produced by the evangelical subculture. And the first bit of feedback is from your mom.
Man, we completely, we messed up. We messed up
bad. We forgot her shout out.
We recorded that episode for like almost 2 hours.
I thought it was going to be 40 minutes. I always think they're going to be 40 minutes.
Oh, man.
You know what? They're never 40 minutes.
And we cut out a lot of digressions in order to get down to the nice trim episode that we released. But what that meant was that when we were wrapping up, I had to leave for work. So we just wrapped it real quick and I ran out the door. And then the next day, like right as we were getting ready to edit it, Mom said, "So, did you remember to include Jungle Jam?"
No.
That was her one requirement. Mention Jungle Jam.
This was a set of, and again, kids' audios with music and adventures and audio stuff and Bible teaching. So, kids' adventures and God's creation or something like that.
Yeah. It was the sort of subtitle. Yeah, so it was all...
Wild Adventures and God's Creation or...
Yeah, Wild Adventures and God's Creation, yeah. I think. And it was, so it was all, you know, lions and giraffes and other animals all, like, living in the jungle and talking about... whatever. And it, to date, is still Mom's favorite dumb joke came from Jungle Jam, where one of the characters, a French squirrel, is yelling for assistance, assistance. And one of the other characters is like, is he calling for his sister? Help! Which, to date, I don't even know, 19, 22 years later, she still gets a kick out of.
There you go. Now, the picture that I used on Facebook for that episode was the cover of the VeggieTales Esther movie. And some listeners just commented on that. Mike Staley, who said he'd give a home to all the lost puppies.
Because again, VeggieTales songs will be in
your
brain
head
forever.
And Bob reported that he still loves VeggieTales. I often link back sermons I hear to VeggieTales episodes. I will point out that Bob goes to our church, so I'm thinking this is a good thing?
Yes.
We won't tell the pastor, but we'll call it a good thing.
He wouldn't be that offended.
Probably not.
Dave McElvaney wrote in on this episode as well, pointing out, as he often does, that this episode wasn't really for him.
The amazing thing is, most of our episodes are not for him, but he loves the podcast.
Or for Nathaniel, who always emails us and goes, I have no idea what you are talking about.
You're spoiling ahead for a future email. But yes.
It's a little confusing, but I suppose he likes us? Now, to be fair, Dave did say that he had one unusual connection to this content from back in the days as an altar boy. In the 1960s. At one point, our parish was assigned a priest who was quite noddity in the extremely stodgy Archdiocese of Philadelphia. First, he was a Dominican friar. Whoa! And I had never met a priest in a monastic order. Parish priests are typically what are called secular priests, which might sound odd to non-Catholics, but it just means that they don't belong to a religious order or institute, for example, the Cistercians, Dominicans, Jesuits, etc.
They're just parish priests.
Right. The priest I mentioned was immediately different in appearance because he wore white monastic robes and sandals instead of the usual black suit with collar, the black cassock, of a regular parish priest. Even odder, he drove a white Mustang convertible, which often had a surfboard in the back seat, which he would drive to the New Jersey shore for surfing after Sunday Mass. He was noted for his homilies, which were full of social justice themes, and he used the expression, "We are Jesus people," so often that he became known as Father Jesus People. Again, this is a nice thing to know, that the Jesus people was not just an evangelical thing. It was a general social movement of the 60s.
Although this fella clearly came from the left coast.
He's
obviously
associated
with that surf culture that birthed that.
Dave continues, as I said, our archdiocese was extremely conservative, and our parish was a pretty conservative one among it, so it was no surprise that his assignment to our parish was over after a single summer. I always assumed he was sui generis, until I heard you talk in this episode about the Jesus freaks coming, in part from the 1960s California surf culture. Thank you for helping me make that connection. Live long and prosper, Dave.
Perfect. Perfect. See, there's always a learning opportunity. And as you just mentioned, spoilers, we heard from our good buddy and consistent feedbacker, Nathaniel Wayne, who found himself in a similar position, as you predicted. Lovely Middletons. Wow. So that evangelical culture episode, that was a surprisingly fun listen about literally nothing I'd ever heard of. All right, I tell a lie. I've heard of VeggieTales, but never saw any of it, so I still say that doesn't count.
That, you know, that's fair.
I honestly have virtually nothing to add for once. This is shortest email ever from Nathaniel.
This is an oddity.
Not even tangentially. I just want to throw out my support and assure you that I'm pretty sure I could listen to the two of you talk about anything at this point and come away happy, which is pretty much, from his perspective, what we just did in that episode.
Basically. Basically. I promise we will have more, I was going to say mainstream, more directly geeky things that some of our less evangelical listeners can hold on to in the coming episodes.
Thank you, Nathaniel. Thank you.
Now, for the opposite end of the spectrum, you posted a link to this episode in a Facebook group, which is known as the 90s Christian Music Recovery Group. So basically, these were the people.
These were the people.
These were the people. Like, we love making our episodes for our listeners, but these were the people that we made this particular episode directly for.
And I will say, when I posted it there, I put a picture of Flying House.
Instead of VeggieTales, you went for the deep cut.
And we got comments such as, Flying House, many an evangelical kid's introduction to anime. Hello, Em.
Hello. Gotta say, Superbook had some trippy animation. Fond memories of Superbook and Flying House, but I recently watched the first episode of Superbook on YouTube and was very impressed by the weird asexual cartoon nudity on the Adam and Eve story.
Yes, they were. Especially Adam. He was particularly pink in that episode. Someone got a screen cap of that, and it was a little odd.
Just blobs. Blobs in a garden.
Someone also added, loved both Superbook and Flying House. Why did they make basically the same type of show within the same time frame?
For the same reason that Gilbert Morris was writing Daystar and Seven Sleepers at the same time.
And actually here, what I said in the episode, my memories were a little bit off. Superbook was the Old Testament. And I said that Flying House was church history. It was mostly more New Testament. From Jesus to Acts to Paul, and I think they did a Revelation John on the Isle of Patmos episode. But I don't think it went beyond that in terms of church history. I may have been thinking Adventures in Odyssey, which had some of those.
Which I will say, did not.
Not nearly
out.
As good. No,
just let me just say, it was not as good as Superbook and Flying House. Nor was it as good as Harry Whodunit. Which, after we released the audio, I went back and re-listened to. Man, I'm glad that held up. that was a solid kid mystery. Yes, of course,
bad.
There's like specific Bible themes.
Yep.
But that was a solidly constructed mystery for 6 to 8 year olds, which is what it was originally intended for.
And then we heard from Mark Baker Wright, who we met earlier at the Doctor Who Con.
Gallifrey 1.
Excellent cosplayer.
Oh yeah.
Long story short, I enjoyed the surprisingly good things from Christian pop culture episode, despite the fact that quite a few of the items you discussed were new to me.
I mean, that was also part of the point.
Yes.
Was a lot of the famous stuff, no, they're good.
These were the hidden gems. Emphasis on hidden as much as gem, but yes. Mark says, although I have my own history within the evangelical subculture, I suspect this is partly due to my falling in between my age and your age.
Uh-huh.
The Flying House Superbook, on the other hand, was squarely within my childhood.
Yes!
For me, it aired on CBN before they started to shift more secular, which is, I assume, why you later found it on TBN. I remember both of those shows fondly, and I'm also a fan of VeggieTales, which was actually getting started right about the time I was in college at a Christian school. Which meant it was on everybody's radar.
Yep.
Finally, you sold me on the Harry Whodunit series. I look forward to listening to the episode I see you've just posted.
I also got high-quality scans of the
cards. Oh, of the cards.
I'll do some creative editing, and I'll send you two PDFs. One is going to be a picture of the cover, and then the other one is a PDF that you can print double-sided. If people want to actually print the cards that go with
it. Very nice.
And Garrett Godfrey from the Good Patron podcast,
former guest,
sent us a few messages. First, he had to stop about 12 minutes in to check out the Good Christian Fun podcast. I've subscribed and cherry-picked a few episodes to listen to later. I am now resuming your show, already in progress.
As long as he just stopped to download those episodes and not listen to everyone before coming back to us, that's okay. Just keep your priorities straight, okay, buddy?
He loved your shout out to the Wittenberg Door and sent a link to an interview with one of the head editors of the Door from back in the day. He then continued, wow, there is so much good stuff here. Iona is awesome.
Yes.
The Lawhead Pendragon series is amazing. I've never heard of Harry Whodunit, but I want it for myself and the kids. And you two are so right about the move of CCM to Nashville. Regarding Flood, the DJ-only label DMC had Junior Vasquez create a 12-inch remix of the song. It was interesting, but not bad.
Interesting. Our longtime listener and feedbacker Gene Hendricks from the Two True Freaks podcast network expressed surprise that I included Stephen R. Lawhead on my list.
I was also surprised when I saw that on your list.
I never considered him a Christian author, Gene says, probably because the King Arthur stuff is already dripping with religious overtones. Those are really good books, especially if you like the multi-generational narrative, which I do. Thank you, Gene. And that is a good point. Lawhead's earlier contemporary novels, earlier in his career, are more stereotypically Christian fiction, quote-unquote. But as you say, the historicals, they just include period-appropriate religious thought and belief, and I say fair, well-drawn characters, sometimes religious characters. I don't think they're treated fairly in fiction sometimes.
Right.
So they tend to be characters I recognize, but that I don't always see in Christian fiction also. Because often in Christian fiction, the people are so perfect and unreal. It's like those books can sometimes be populated by people I've never met in 35 years in the church.
Yeah.
I've never met people like the leads in some Christian fiction novels.
Which is why Callie Weber.
Mindy Starnes
Clark. From Mindy Starnes Clark's Million Dollar Mysteries is such a great standout character because I know that person.
Yes. Yep.
I've met that person. Those people have been in mom's women's groups for years.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It feels mean to be, I'm so surprised to find a real person, but it's worth pointing out.
It is kind of weird in Lawhead's case that maybe the most realistic, the flawed characters, but the believing, the struggling, those real Christian characters are most successful when he puts them in a historical context than trying to present flawed characters in a contemporary context. That doesn't always go over well.
Yeah.
So very, very strange.
The kind and generous Darren and Ruth Sutherland also said they enjoyed the episode and hearing about things that we truly enjoyed. Now we have to go and check out some music by Iona.
Yes, you do.
These two will never again be compared. But I love Iona for the same reason that I love Meatloaf. Which is to say that they are big fans of the 14, 18, 28 minute epic ballads. So they have one song which is in two parts, which is Bishe Imo, something like that. It's in Gaelic. And then they have another one, which is three parts. It is 24 minutes in total. It is called Encircling, and it is a meditation on Patrick's breastplate. Mm-hmm. And it is amazing. So, like, if you personally are into meditation, I would say of any variety, but specifically if you're interested in a Christian religious sort of framing for your meditation, it is the best meditation song ever because it's got some chanting, it's got some lyrics, it's got sweeping instrumentals that go up and down, it's got a very rhythmic pattern. Highly recommended.
And one of the unique things about Iona within the Christian music field, probably half their songs are complete instrumentals and about half their songs have lyrics.
And yet they have better theology than of the vast majority of CCM with no lyrics.
That is true. That is true. And
see, you told me I wasn't allowed to be mean in the actual episode. So I'm going to be mean now.
And from last episode, we released an episode of Harry Whodunit. I was shocked, shocked, shocked by Christopher Ouellette's dramatic admission that he had never heard of this.
I legitimately, I don't believe that they printed more than 50 copies of this box set, and we own two of them.
Again, he falls between our ages. I think that's what it is. It had a very, very brief, shelf life. I'm very excited to hear what this is. I have an hour drive with my daughters, and this is on the playlist.
And he did give a follow-up that said, meh, they weren't terribly interested in this, which I get. I think his daughter's like 11.
Maybe.
So yeah. I think it was a little bit outside of her her age range.
But as you said, you fully endorse. It held up. It held up.
And,
Mom and I listened to it and loved it.
Yeah. And in combination with the cards, which you can find on our blog, and we might tweet another link to the card companion post. It was a pretty solid thing.
It was such a good package. The whole thing was so cool.
I also really appreciated that all of the stories were always a modern mystery sort of concept that was a pastiche of both literature and a Bible story.
Yep.
So the first one was Phantom of the Opera plus Noah's Ark.
Right.
And I think the second one was She's the Man and David and Goliath. So if that sounds interesting to you, watch the feed for
That one might be released at some other time as well. Clinton Robinson said about Harry Whodunit, it was about as corny as he expected, but it was an acceptable kind of corny. And my concern was how forced the religious parts would be, and Harry felt about as forced as VeggieTales once it figured out how to balance the content. Pretty impressive for a kid's market. After all, it could have ended up being like Gospel Bill or Adventures in Dry Gulch. Let's just say things we didn't mention in that episode for a reason.
And Clinton added one final very important comment.
Yes.
After he looked at the blog post and saw the cards that were included with the audio, he's dressed like Inspector Gadget. Yes, he is.
This just gets better and better. See? Those cards are valuable.
Gene Hendricks commented and asked, in order to get the full babysitting experience, you should listen to this, 7, 8 times in a row? And you said, for the low, low price of $1 an hour.
Hashtag, those were the days.
It was a long time ago.
Well, we thank you for all those comments. We enjoy them very much. But we are going to close the episode on a more serious note. We have talked about our friend Robert Ludwig before and shared info and prayer requests from him regarding his wife's health issues. And here's a tweet he posted in early October. I'm asking for some prayers, hopes, and good thoughts for my wife and family. Today, she received her second bone marrow transplant for leukemia. Hopefully, this one works. The first one lasted about 14 months before failing, in case anyone is interested, and thank you in advance. So we just ask blessings on Robert's wife and on him and the rest of their family and friends and extended community.
And with that final, that final call, we would like to thank all of you for listening. We know that this show occupies a very, very, very small niche within a pretty small niche.
The good thing about this episode is that we didn't actually cover any content that people have never heard of before.
True.
Because if they'd listened to a prior episode, they've heard of it then.
Exactly.
So, genius!
Hopefully we didn't lose anyone in the weeds on this one. And we are glad that you are all here. We value each and every one of you.
All are welcome. And until next time, may the Force be with you.
And also with you.
While you're waiting for the next podcast episode, check out our websites. DarknessToLight.blogspot.com contains reviews, essays, and other similar ramblings.
And DarknessToLight.tumblr.com, which contains some of that material, as well as top tens, cool photographs, memes, and religious puns. We also run a general interest comic book podcast network, Relatively Geeky. That content can be found at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com or by searching iTunes for Relatively Geeky.
Let us know what you think of this topic, this episode, or this podcast in general. Feel free to send your thoughts to us at dorknesstolight@gmail.com. We would also appreciate any ratings or reviews left for the podcast in the iTunes store to help like-minded people find us.
Our intro, outro, and promo music is by Anderson Kale. Search iTunes to purchase their music.
Thanks for listening.